listening to the voice of Lily Rachel Smith. She's one of those unique human spirits who has touched a lot of people, including many she never met. Lily was special in many ways. She loved singing, of course. She was, at a young age, passionate about equality, human rights, and global injustices, just like her parents, Ace and Laura, who've been movers and shakers in the California political scene for decades. Lily was special in other ways, too. Tragically, she passed away at age 15, but her legacy has led to hope for thousands of others and led her mother to an unexpected new calling. Today, we'll tell Lily's story and that of the nonprofit she inspired, Beyond Differences. This is Crazy Good Turns. We tell stories about people who do amazing things for others. I'm your host, Brad Shaw. Laura Talmas, Lily's mom, was raised in New York City. She says she's always been an activist at heart. She moved to Michigan for college, moved to San Francisco after graduating, and found good work as a political aide in City Hall, where she met Ace. They started to build a life together, living in beautiful Marin County. They had a son, Abram, and 3.5 years later, along came Lily.
Lily's birth was a surprise, to say the least. In California, when a woman is over the age of 35, they are required by law to have amniocentesis. So I went along with that and found out that I was having a perfectly healthy child and couldn't wait to welcome Lily into our lives. And the night that I delivered Lily, I could tell that there was something wrong just from the reaction of those who were with me in the birthing room. I had a midwife and fortunately, though, was in a hospital setting because Lily required immediate medical attention. The faces around me, my husband's, my mother's, and my sister's, and the midwife, all fell as soon as Lily came out. And I could tell there was something wrong because when they placed her on me, her little fingers, these beautiful little fingers, were like mittens. The fingers were all fused and she didn't look right. And that became, if you will, a bit of the odyssey of having a child with medical complications that are very life-threatening right away. So by 2 o'clock that morning, we were told that she had a very rare syndrome called Apert, and it was nothing that they could have anticipated.
Apert syndrome is incredibly rare. Laura compares the incidence of Apert syndrome to one misspelled word in an 11-volume encyclopedia, a spontaneous genetic mutation that occurs at the moment of conception, impossible to detect or do anything about. It's characterized mainly by abnormal skull and facial growth and fusion of the bones in the hands and feet, and there is no cure. It often requires many painful surgeries just to lead a relatively normal life. Laura says she has family that survived the Holocaust. It put her family situation and how to handle it into stark perspective.
When you are raised with that kind of strength or luck that gets you through something as enormous as surviving the Holocaust in Eastern Europe, you begin to see the bar set pretty high for what you need to go through in life and whether you're going to make it or not. And for us, there was no choice. I immediately had to find the strength to deal with my own queasiness around being in hospitals, around what it was going to require for Ace and I to be a strong family and get Lily the best medical care she could. But that instinct comes out, and I became, you know, Miss Mama Bear, if you will. And we headed into some pretty rough years where the medical treatment of Apert is not for the faint of heart.
Lily had her first surgery when she was 72 hours old to open cartilage that had fused in her nasal passage. At 16 weeks, she started a series of brutal cranial surgeries to remove some of the defects she was born with. In total, Lily had to undergo 12 surgeries.
And then there was the matter of those little beautiful mitten hands. I probably took Lily to 5 or 6 hand surgeons that specialized only in hand surgery to find out what our options were. And I heard all different opinions from leave it alone, she'll be fine, to, well, I might be able to get 2 or 3 digits out of each hand. And until I heard the doctor, turned out to be at Stanford University, who said, Lily's got the architecture, I can get you 10 fingers. I said, I'm going for you.
As Lily grew and with political consultants for parents, she became passionate about specific issues, becoming an advocate for special needs children in her Marin County School District. But growing up is hard for all of us, and especially for Lily. By the time Lily got to middle school, her mother says students and teachers began to treat her differently. She's careful not to cast blame.
2 years into middle school, two tough years for Lily, lots of meetings with the resource counselors and the teachers. I don't know if anybody who's listening is familiar with what's called an IEP or an individual education plan, but all kids with learning differences or special needs or physical disabilities usually end up getting an IEP, in which they try to customize and tailor a curriculum or adaptations that the kids need. And Lily had an IEP for 2 years in middle school, and I felt that the teachers, as well-intentioned as they were missing the boat about what was really going on with Lily. They kept wanting to fix the fact that she couldn't read an analog clock in a day of digital clocks, when I thought, that's not that important. I think what's really important is that Lily is feeling isolated and pulled out of all of the classes with her friends and classmates to give her special two periods of something else. And it wasn't just math and science.
Laura remembers that Lily would often call her in the middle of the day.
Can you come pick me up? And I would say, oh, honey, I can't pick you up. I'm in the middle of my work day. I really can't. I said, can you go to Miss So-and-so's room and hang out with her? I do that every day. She was exasperated with me. Well, can you go to the library? No, I've done that every day this week as well. And at first, I kept saying, don't be silly. I mean, Lil, we live in the best community. These are great schools. You're getting all the resources you need. Let's go, go, go. And then after about 2 years, I turned to my husband and I said, I think she really knows better than we do what's going to work for her. So she begged us to take her out of our public middle school and have her homeschooled.
Hello?
Hello, Dr. Pantel. It's Brad Shaw.
Hey, Brad. How's it going?
My name's Dr. Matthew Pantel, and I'm a resident in pediatrics at the University of California, San Francisco. My research is focused on social isolation and its relationship to health outcomes. There are several definitions of social isolation, at least in the literature. Usually social isolation is defined as sort of a lack of social support, and so it's a lack of having connections to friends and feeling that either subjectively, feeling like you don't have somebody that you could count on, or you don't have someone that is there for you emotionally, feeling like you lack those.
I've been my own friend.
Lily needed an escape from the social isolation she was feeling at school. And after a brief stint at homeschooling, Lily and her family found a boarding school in Iowa called Scattergood.
And what was the impetus for her decision, which I think was a really brave one, to want to apply to Scattergood, the boarding school in Iowa?
She wanted a new start. She wanted a new community. She wanted to meet new friends. She wanted to start all over where she could be accepted for who she was. She had so much self-confidence in herself, but felt that she wasn't going to get a fair shot if she stayed in Marin County. And that was the reason.
And it sounds like she thrived there.
She did. It was great. I think that Lily, in some strange way, might have known that life was going by faster for her than maybe for most of us. And leaving her to set up her dormitory room that first day of school was like somebody was going off to college or getting married for the first time. She did everything perfectly. She had her bedding all set up, the posters, the videos that she loved, her school books, everything was ready, as if she were setting up a college dorm room instead of a high school dorm room. And it was almost creepy looking back on it and realizing that 7 weeks later, we would get the call that she had passed away. But she lived what she wanted to do for those 7 weeks.
One Friday night, Lily sent Laura a message. It read, "Hi, Mommy. I know you're at the movies. I'm going to bed soon. But let's talk first thing in the morning. I love you." Lily died in her sleep that night.
This was not a life-threatening disease. This was really a bizarre incident that happened that the autopsy still will not conclusively say what happened, but the coroner's office in the state of Iowa, who I became somewhat attached to after Lily's passing, gave me his personal opinion about what he thinks might have happened to her in the middle of the night, which was that she probably had sudden unexpected death in epilepsy or SUDEP, and so I think she probably had a seizure.
It's hard to know how things would have turned out for Lily if she hadn't felt isolated at her former school in Marin. Laura thinks about it often, but she also knows that Lily's experience taught her about the effects of social isolation, particularly the effects it has on children in middle school, and how a system that creates socially isolated children results in tragic symptoms that we know all too well. Think of the horrific spate of school shootings from Columbine to the most recent. In many cases, the shooters were described as socially isolated, removed from friendships or even relationships with peers. The shootings were symptoms of the sometimes unnoticed illness of social isolation.
It is not to say that everybody who feels socially isolated grows up to be a shooter. That's not what I'm saying. But that is how it reverses back to seeing how important this issue is to nail it now and make sure that kids do not feel like they're wandering around with no sense of belonging to other people at school. It's just not okay for the rest of us. It's not okay for society or for them.
Always the activist, Laura knew she had work to do. It started by simply wanting to tell Lily's story, starting at Lily's memorial service.
We put together a small booklet that we handed out to the guests who entered our synagogue. And some of the writing was Lily's essays about her own life growing up. There were poetry, family photographs, and the like. And there were a group of childhood friends of Lily's who were sitting in the audience waiting for the service to begin, read the essays, and these are the children that came up to me in the weeks after Lily passed to tell me that they really didn't realize that the effect that they were having on her in middle school was why she left to get homeschooled and then eventually go off to boarding school. And my job as a grieving mom and as a loving person in the community was to say, it's okay, I know you didn't know, but this is truly how Lily did feel.
6 months later, Laura decided to throw a sweet 16 party for Lily on her birthday and use it to raise money for Scattergood, which had had such a big and positive impact on Lily in her short time there. They raised a lot more money than they expected, and Laura's friends and family urged her and Ace to leverage their experience and talent to do even more. Laura talked to Lily's homeschool teacher.
And I said, Kathy, what do you think was the most important thing that you would say about Lily? And she said to me, well, everybody knows that Lily was socially isolated. And I said, what? I never heard of that before. And I never heard those two words put together, but it dawned on me that that's exactly how Lily felt, that there was never teasing, there was never bullying, there was never anything outwardly mean said or done to Lily. But the insidiousness of feeling socially isolated was as painful for Lily as those could have been as well.
This was the beginning of Laura's new project, Beyond Differences, started in March 2010. It's the only nonprofit focused exclusively on adolescent social isolation. Its mission is to empower students to end social isolation in middle school.
We are a student leadership organization. We are literally student-led. For us, the game is about putting children in charge of their own school campus by giving them the inspiration and the empowerment to learn how to do that. We created fun student-led activities like our most popular National No One Eats Alone Day, which started out in one or two schools in Marin. And not surprisingly, we picked that time of day because we know from children that that's the most vulnerable time. When you don't feel like you have any friends, it's a nightmare to try to figure out who you're going to eat lunch with and how you're going to keep yourself busy for that 20 minutes or 40 minutes. So No One Eats Alone Day is an example of students rallying around each other, doing something that's fun for them, and creating an inclusive atmosphere at their own school. So our money's on the kids, that they know how to take care of each other if given the authority and the tools and the inspiration to do that.
Mm-hmm. My name is Beverly Forbes, and today we're having sliced pork, broccoli, casserole, sweet potatoes, cabbage, and chopped barbecue sandwiches. And at our salad bar, we have this regular salad.
Stephen and I attended a No One Eats Alone Day at Slater Elementary in South Atlanta, one of over 1,000 schools around the world that took part in the most recent event, thanks to a free toolkit that Beyond Differences has created and ships to each school.
They can create games and activities and a fun way for them to break each other up so that when you walk into the cafeteria, You know something's different that day. You're going to be asked to sit with different friends or make new friends. And there are conversation cards that come in different languages that are on everybody's table. There are balloons, there's activities. We like to think of it as an add water. All you have to do is add your own imagination and the kids can create the most fun lunchtime that they've ever had.
And that fun translates to meaningful reflection among the students. One kid summed it up pretty well.
My name is Akeem Mushy, and I think we should have peace on the world. Nobody picking on nobody, or nobody being mean to each other. We should all be friends.
I asked Laura what Lily would think about her work with Beyond Differences and social isolation. She says Lily would probably roll her eyes, but then...
I miss her very much. She was my, really my soulmate. We had a lot of fun together, and I know how much she loved me. So the separation between the two of us has been really hard. I know it would be for any parent and child, but I only know about my relationship with Lily and how difficult that was. And so for all the years that I had Lily and all that I knew she had to go through, being a beautiful child but looking different, I knew that I needed to shore her up with some extra love and extra strength, which I think naturally came to me. She's part of my soul, and I think our DNA was so connected to one another, both biologically and emotionally, that I think she'd be very proud of the work that I'm doing to make sure that nobody really has to feel the way she did when she was growing up. And so for me, I really do believe that if people would have treated Lily a little bit more fairly and not judged her so quickly on her appearances, I think they would have found that they were missing out on having a fantastic friend. She was loyal, smart, very politically active, loved good rock and roll music like I do, and she was a really, really cool kid. So I'm afraid that people just judge each other a little too quickly.
I'm Brad Shaw. Thanks for listening to this episode of Crazy Good Turns. Go to crazygoodturns.org to learn more about Beyond Differences and to submit your ideas for extraordinary people and organizations that we should feature. Can I talk to you? Will you hear me out? You might have noticed we found some great music to support our podcast, and we provided a Spotify playlist of the full tracks on our website so you can take a longer listen, which we hope you'll do. And if you're a band with a song we should consider featuring, you can submit it on our website too. Let's start again. Crazy Good Turns is audio engineered by Stephen Key, music supervision and mixing by Score Score in Los Angeles, and a special thanks to Megan Basinger. We hope you like our podcast and help us out by sharing us in your social network and giving us a review on iTunes. Take care and let's connect again soon.
You can always do something nice to them, they'll probably be your friend.